40. Hayden. Hayden looked out through the open side of the Iroquois, watching the city of Sinisco approach below. It was like most of the cities in the area, ravaged by war, beaten and crumbling, but not broken. The outskirts were lined with streets filled with dilapidated buildings and rusted wrecks of old cars, shattered glass, chunks of rock and other debris left over from the first invasion. Vegetation crept in through the cracks of worn asphalt, cement, and concrete. In some places, the weeds took on a surreal beauty that captured Hayden's imagination every time he saw them. To the north, the detonated halves of the Golden Gate Bridge rested on opposite shores, while the central expanse poked up from the bay. To the east, the Oakland Bay Bridge was in a similar state, the overall destruction cutting the city off from Trife attack on three sides. His eyes turned toward the northeast section of the city, toward home. The destruction lessened, the vegetation faded. The buildings, while old, showed increasing signs of stability and improving conditions. A wall had been erected along the perimeter, composed of concrete and old cars, tracing Interstate 80 from the Bay Bridge to Route 100 and following it north to Black Point. It was all that remained of the city, and it was more than enough for the survivors who lived there. Or it had been enough. The loss of Haven and La Vega had brought thousands of refugees north, and he could see them, too, camping just inside the walls. They had crews working overtime to test the stability of more buildings to renovate for the new residents to have safe places to live. It wasn't a fast process, especially considering the size of the influx. It would take months to get them all adequately housed. Maybe years. Not that any of them were complaining. They had been lucky to escape north with their lives and were fortunate to be in one of the only two places Hayden knew had walls of any kind. There was another benefit. A lot of the refugees wanted to be UWT law officers. They wanted to learn to defend themselves, their families, and the rest of the survivors. They wanted to stand up and fight against the threat that had chased them here and for the cause they had come to believe in. Hayden's cause. Peace, security, justice, freedom. Simple tenets that were easy to name and harder to achieve, but they were working on it. The helicopter started its descent, dropping among a handful of buildings under repairs and landing in the street beside the tallest of the intact structures. Old documentation had informed them the building used to be called the Transamerica Pyramid. 260 meters tall and shaped the way its name suggested, it rose above almost everything in the city, the newly restored light in the crown jewel at the top, a beacon for the refugees to follow. It was the home of the United Western Territory government, the main headquarters for law, and the most extensive and advanced science and research center on the west coast of the former United States, if not the entire globe. Of course, the Trife problem wasn't localized to the states, but Hayden had enough to worry about here to give too much thought to the rest of the planet. Judging by the Relia interest in this part of the world, he had a feeling they had fared significantly better than some other places. It was a mixed blessing, to be sure. Deputy Fry was waiting at the landing area when the chopper touched down. He hurried over to the helicopter, staying low to avoid the diminishing downwash so he could meet Hayden and the others as they exited. A second group of deputies waited nearby to take the bodies of the fallen.
"Sheriff, Chief Deputy Hicks,"
Fry said in greeting as Hayden and Hicks climbed out of the helicopter.
"Deputy Fry," Hayden said. "Where's the governor?"
"In the lab."
Hayden shook his head.
"Doc Hess told her to stay out of the lab."
"Sheriff, I think you'd have better luck pacifying a Trife."
"Salino, you're with me," Hayden said. "Hicks, get your people rested. I'm not sure what comes next, but I want you ready when it happens."
"Roger, Sheriff," Hicks said.
Hayden and Salino headed away from the helicopter and up the steps of the pyramid, while Hicks took the Rangers to the armory to shed their equipment and then to the barracks for some downtime. The ride north had been quick but tense, the entire unit stressed by what they had experienced. Hayden didn't blame them. He was stressed too. The new aliens were one thing. The strange hologram was something else. Its threat of war and its arrogant confidence had left him shaken. For as much as the UWT had accomplished against the Trife, They had no chance against the true might of the hunger. But the might of the hunger was coming, and sooner than he had expected. Inside the building, the two men crossed the lobby to the bank of lifts at the rear. Hayden tapped the control pad and a set of doors slid open, one of the cabs already waiting. They boarded and descended to sub-level 3, exiting into an underground parking garage that had been converted to a research and development lab. Dozens of computers and displays of various shapes, sizes, and ages sat on tables spread across the open floor, while bundles of wires snaked away toward the corner. A handful of engineers perched on an assortment of seats, from an aluminum stool to an old wooden dining chair. Some ran programs that sifted through data stores, while others used small tools to try to repair more of the machines. Almost all of it was made before the war, scavenged by the UWT's collectors or acquired from scavengers via trade. More equipment was always coming in, assessed and either rebuilt or used as parts to restore other devices. Hayden didn't see Natalia with the other engineers. He turned toward the southern section of the lab. His eyes crossed over a cluster of computer terminals fronting a half dozen large machines that Dr. Hess and Natalia had been using in recent biological and genetic research and testing. And then his gaze passed over a makeshift divider to a terminal resting beside a motorized chair salvaged from a dentist's office. The divider was composed of individual wood crates, each one containing a mechanical limb, augments similar to Hayden's arms, while the terminal and chair were used to install and program the prosthetics. Another machine rested to the right of the Botter station that Natalia called a neural interlink. From the outside, it was little more than a metal frame wrapped around a plastic seat, but the exterior simplicity hid the interior complexity. Originally designed to allow humans to communicate with the Goliaths, it was the result of years of work by some of Proxima's brightest scientists. They still used it for the Goliaths, but now they had a secondary. It was a dangerous but potentially invaluable use for the technology. Hayden spotted Natalia in the seat and reacted with a deep sigh. Dismayed but not surprised, he glanced at Celino, who knew to wait while Hayden approached the interlink. Wires ran from a box at the side of the frame to electrodes attached to different parts of Natalia's body beneath her clothes. A wired cap and a pair of bulky goggles hid most of her face, leaving only the tips of her short black hair, small turned-up nose, and jaw exposed. Chief Engineer Sean Lutz was sitting at a computer terminal across from the interlink, monitoring the output from the system. A tall, rail-thin man with wild hair and a scruffy face, he stiffened when he noticed Hayden approaching.
Sheriff Duke, he said. You're back early.
I radioed that I was on my way, Hayden replied. I thought Nat would be waiting outside.
The system output froze. Natalia reached up, grabbing the goggles and lifting them off her head. She looked at Hayden with apologetic brown eyes.
Hayden, she said, before you say anything, I have a good reason for being here.
Do you? Hayden replied, unconvinced.
Natalia hung the goggles on a waiting hook and removed the cap while he knelt beside her, reaching under her shirt and tenderly peeling the electrodes off her skin.
I almost lost you the last time you used this thing.
She leaned over, putting her forehead against his.
I know. I wasn't using it. We were collecting some diagnostics.
Preparing it for use, Hayden translated.
Caught, Natalia admitted. It's been weeks, Hayden. I'm fine now, back to normal.
I'm not eager to see that change again anytime soon.
We may not have a choice, all things considered.
Hayden stood and offered his hand. Natalia took it, letting him pull her out of the interlink. They embraced for a moment.
Does this mean I'm not in trouble? Lutz asked. I was only following the governor's orders.
We'll see, Hayden replied.
He locked eyes with Natalia.
We need to talk.